Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Last week brought reprieves to U.S. military strikes on Iranian power facilities, but not much in the way of credible ceasefire negotiations in the U.S.-Iran conflict. That means uncertainty persists as investors are awaiting signs for either escalation in the conflict or de-escalation. Joining us here today to help provide some clarity is Jason Dreho, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, once again, thank you for dropping by on this Monday morning. Today, doing the podcast here in studio. So great to be back at the table with you.
Good morning, Dan. It's good to be in the studio again.
Absolutely. So, Jason, let's begin with how the markets are responding to these almost daily changes in the conflict. Your latest blog entitled Shifting Concerns, it does suggest market pricing is shifting. So how so and why?
Well, a week ago when we recorded the podcast, we were talking about market pricing in what I would classify at that point was an inflation shock, stemming obviously from the massive surge in oil prices, and that was sort of leading to a rate shock. But it wasn't really pricing in kind of real growth shock. And you can look at the market pricing, you know, from when the conflict began, so taking February 27th, right before, that was a Friday right before it began, to say, now about 10 days ago, what was the market doing? You know, oil prices were up, 50%. The market went from pricing almost 2.5 Fed rate cuts this year to now pricing at that time a 40% chance of a rate hike. Yield curve or yields across the whole curve went higher. So the 2-year treasury yield had been up over 50 basis points. The 10-year, up on about, 45. And equities are down, 5%, which is relatively modest when you consider that move in rates. Just mechanically, kind of finance 101 will tell you your discount rate, your, cost of capital goes higher, equity valuations go lower. Once you factor that in, the growth component of the equity decline is, only a couple of percent. And defensive sectors weren't really clearly outperforming. So that was where we were a week ago. I think if we start to look at price action last week, and particularly, kind of culminating on Friday, you start to see the market shifting a little bit. And still certainly worried about inflation, but now getting a little incrementally more worried about growth and how this conflict could, last a long time and therefore weigh on growth. And just to give you some, data points of why I think that was the case. So on Friday, we saw the market pricing still for a hike, but down to 30% as of Friday. But on Thursday, it was at 60%. So, significant sort of change there. The 2-year treasury yield was down at 2 or 6 basis points on Friday. All this was despite oil prices going about 6% higher. Now, that was actually the first real sign of a negative correlation between oil prices and the 2-year yield in a number of weeks. So they've basically been moving lockstep. Higher oil goes, the higher the 2-year goes because the market's pricing in more, kind of Fed cuts or more restrictive policies you shift in that direction. When that correlation goes from positive to negative like it did on Friday, that to me is a sign that the market's starting to get a little more worried about growth versus inflation. As a result of that, gold rallied 3% after selling off quite a bit. Gold obviously is going to be sensitive to the interest rates, the sort of opportunity cost. So if your funding cost of cash or short-term interest rates goes lower, gold can also equal can go higher. And then also on Friday, we saw the S&P was down almost 1.7%. Its cumulative decline since it began, the conflict began, was 7.5%. And we saw that, especially Friday, but also Thursday, defensive sectors were really kind of clearly outperforming, like utilities, consumer staples. So Friday, just one day, but it's sort of starting to see some cracks in, kind of what is driving markets. Now, Monday morning, we're seeing rates go lower, equities are going higher. This is very early as we're kind of recording this on a Monday morning. Perhaps unwind a little bit of the de-risking on Friday. Perhaps it's some optimism of continued, at least tweets from President Trump regarding positive negotiations. Iranians don't seem to be backing that up, but I think the market has maybe taken a sign that, a couple more weeks and this will wrap up, but that's kind of where we are. Now, just in terms of why the market went from pricing more inflation shock to a growth shock, the lack of a clear progress towards a ceasefire that would open up the Strait of Hormuz and allow more oil to go through, that's somewhat concerning. Delaying any military action on Iranian infrastructure and power production, it's a positive. I mean, it's not certainly not a bad thing, but it does mean that this sort of drags on longer. There's more uncertainty. And as the further we get into oil or April, the more the concerns are that this is going to be you know, sort of a nonlinear disruption to oil markets. It just takes longer than to kind of, you know, recover. And so the longer this extends, the more this risks not just being an inflation shock, but being a growth shock as well. So I think that's kind of where the markets, you know, want to see this wrapped up. I mean, I think we all would for a variety of reasons. The longer it persists, the more I think the markets get concerned about how disruptive this could be for the economy overall.
So a very fluid headline environment at the moment, and that reflects in the markets. And if we turn to the economic environment, Jason, there will be more intense focus on economic data as growth concerns rise. What does the current data tell us so far about the impact, and what are you watching for in the data to be released this week?
Well, we still don't have much data for March, but that's going to change beginning on Wednesday, because Wednesday is, you know, April 1st. And then once we get into next month, the calendar turns, we start to get data from the prior month. So this is going to start to shift. What we have seen thus far is, things like survey data of consumer confidence that occurred in March. So it does incorporate the impact of, this war beginning. That has taken a hit, not dramatically so, but it's certainly, taken a bit of a hit. Yeah, there's not real concrete evidence that consumer spending has been adversely impacted in some way. You know, we will get retail sales released also on April 1st on Wednesday, but it's for February. So again, it doesn't really reflect the what's happened since that point in time. Higher frequency data like on credit card spending doesn't really show much material impact. Again, it should be shifting some consumption from goods to perhaps just filling up your tank with gas, but overall not a material impact, at least just yet. The more significant data points that we're going to get this week include the ISM manufacturing survey on Wednesday. That was done in March, so it will kind of reflect some of the latest developments. Consensus forecasts on Bloomberg suggest it won't change from February, so still in positive territory. And then some of the sort of regional manufacturing surveys that came out in March that are a little bit more real time that can sometimes be a precursor to what the ISM suggests. Collectively, again, point to like an ISM sort of holding steady. So that's, if that plays out, that's a positive. And then on Friday, which is Good Friday, so the markets by and large will be closed, equity markets. We do get the March payrolls report. The consensus forecast is for 60,000. This comes after the January payrolls report that was at minus 92,000. Now, there were some anomalies to the January data. There were some strikes going on that subtracted an estimate about 30,000. Those strikes are over, so mechanically that can add to, the March payrolls. When the data was being done for February, the numbers were, it was cold. There was some storms that could weigh down the estimates. March, the weather was better. The survey week, was warmer, so you can actually see pull forward in, spring hiring, for example. So the sort of the view seems to be that the number could be higher. Some estimates are 100,000 plus. If it is in that range, at least alleviates at least some of the near-term labor market concerns. If it's another minus 92,000, that would be a real problem. But if it goes the other direction, for the time being, that helps. Now, ultimately, this is still early on the impact, and so won't sort of solve all the problems of growth concerns, because if it takes time to accumulate, the pain from higher oil prices, higher gas prices, we'll start to build in the spring, in the summer. But these are things to kind of watch for. It will help if it's goods, but it's not a game changer at this point in time for the overall outlook.
So going back to your blog for a few moments, Jason, again, that title, Shifting Concerns. Within your blog, you do note that there are echoes to 2022 because that year also experienced an oil price shock and an inflation shock. But you also say that there are important differences to be mindful of. So what are they, Jason, and why does that matter for the investment outlook?
Well, just to recap what happened in 2022, Russia invaded Ukraine. It was around the end of February. Oil prices surged at that point in time, sort of in response to sort of various restrictions by the U.S. and other kind of allies to, kind of curtail what Russia can sell. So there's an oil price shock. We also think about what happened that year. Inflation was already surging, and this is an important difference between today versus that time period. Headline CPI inflation was over 8% in 2022, when that oil shock began in February. Ultimately, inflation went up to 9%. It might have got there regardless of whether the conflict began, but it was very high and rising. Today, headline CPI, the latest data we have for February, is at 2.4%. So a very big difference there. Interest rates were much lower back in 2022. So it's hard to imagine, but when that conflict began, the Fed was basically still just winding down its QE purchases, and the Fed funds rate was still kind of between 0 and 25 basis points. And the 10-year yield was, you know, below 2% kind of in the early part of that year, like as low as 1.67%, I believe, at the start of 2022. Conditions are very different now on the interest rates. You know, the 10-year was round or over 4%. The Fed funds rate between 3.5%, 3.75%, obviously much higher. And, you know, by estimates and neutral, I'd say it's still slightly restrictive versus incredibly accommodative before. There are other inflation forces back in 2022 that sort of had the Fed very focused on it. You know, the job growth, we just talked about what we're hoping for here, right, you know, this year. In 2022, non-farm payrolls averaged 377,000 jobs per month. It's a very different labor market dynamic. Fiscal policy was still very loose. There's, you know, the CHIPS Act were passed, infrastructure. You still had stimulus from the American Recovery Act. So a lot of fiscal stimulus helping. And then the supply chains globally were still recovering from the pandemic. And you can see the supply chain was probably the biggest driver of why inflation kind of surged, you know when it did.
Right.
That's not an issue globally kind of, you know, at this point in time. So the inflation risk is much more concentrated on oil prices going higher, which affects headline a little bit much more, less on core. Labor market is definitely softer today. The Fed, policy is already a little bit restrictive. So from the Fed's perspective, in 2022, they were way behind the curve. They had to focus on tightening financial conditions to bring inflation down. Labor market was strong, so they could sort of unilaterally focus or singularly focus on the inflation part of the mandate and ignore the labor market. Today, it's a different situation. Inflation risks is not as bad. Growth risks are worse. So they can take a more sort of balanced approach. So the tightening that they had to engage in terms of financial conditions, much less need to do that this year. So as a result, I think the impact for the overall markets and across asset classes should not be anywhere as bad then. And like there still could be certainly drawdown risk. Mm-hmm. The S&P 500 peak to trough decline in 2022 was 25%, but that occurred over 9 months. You know, peaked on January 4th, and it wasn't until October 12th that the markets hit a bottom and started to recover. Mm-hmm. Over that same time period of roughly 9 to 9.5 months, U.S. government bonds kind of in total were down 13% because rates were just so low. This time, rates, unless they just hold steady, you're going to get a positive return there. So I think that's just it's a very different environment. The conditions, the macro conditions are different. The risk of inflation isn't as bad. The risk of rates going higher from the starting point, much less. And so, yes, it has some similarities to 2022, but for, I think for portfolios, this, you know, it's a much different situation this year than it was that year.
So with that context in terms of what to do as far as positioning in this environment, and we talked about how it remains fluid with headline risk, let's end today on investment recommendations. Jason, what are you conveying to investors right now?
So just, you know, like this is all very hard to predict. It's a very fluid situation, and the daily news flow kind of ebbs and flows between maybe some positive signs of de-escalation to signs of escalation. At a minimum, the longer it sort of takes to resolve, kind of in some sense, the worse it is for the markets because investors really dislike uncertainty, and having uncertainty not being resolved, that starts to weigh on sort of, you know, investor sentiment, you know, overall. It's also the case, as I mentioned, the longer it persists, the greater the risk of a growth shock. And if it's a growth shock, that is negative for risk assets across the board. There could be certainly more downside. So I don't want to, you know, underplay that possibility. Now, if there is a silver lining to this, from a markets perspective or portfolio perspective, if investors in the market start to become a little more worried about growth, traditional portfolio diversifiers start to work a little more effectively. And I go back to, you know, the numbers I was citing for last Friday, when investors perhaps were getting more worried about growth, what you saw is, you know, bond yields by and large declined. So bonds were helping to provide some diversification. Lower rates helped gold. So gold was providing some diversification. And again, more defensive equities like utilities were helping to provide some more diversification. When you're worried about an inflation shock and that's dominating things, it's kind of bad across the board. Everything kind of tends to sell off. Where if it's a growth shock, some things can at least perform better on a relative basis. So at least you can start to hedge your portfolio a little bit better. So I think that's, you know, something to keep in mind. So some of the ideas, sort of recommendations, you know, that are, you know, that we've been talking about is, I think are consistent with that. The other thing is ultimately, because this is really hard to predict and it's difficult to change trade geopolitical events because you never know exactly when things will end, that, you know, the best course of action is still to stay invested, you know, kind of stay around sort of a long-term strategic, you know, benchmark, make sure you're diversified, and sort of, you know, when we say kind of de-risk, what we mean is if you're aggressively overweight risk assets or tilted in one area, make sure your portfolio is not taking on excessive risks in a certain area. Sort of, again, kind of getting back to a more balanced, diversified portfolio. So, that's kind of the overall view. On a 6 to 9 month perspective, again, we still think ultimately the U.S. economy grows, around 2-ish% this year. Earnings growth still could be upwards of 10+%. All these things are supportive, for equities. But in the near term, until we get some sort of resolution in the middle, with this conflict, things could get worse over the next 2 to 3 weeks before ultimately you get a flipping point. So, be prepared for definitely more volatility near term. But ultimately, kind of longer term, we still remain, relatively kind of positive on the outlook. So if you're a long-term investor, that's, kind of can stay invested.
Well, Jason, just given the fluidity, as we've said, of this all, a lot of headline risk out there, very helpful guidance this morning. Thank you for dropping by to touch base with our listeners, our clients, and do look forward to picking back up with our conversation in the week ahead.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investor investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.